CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, who teaches law at the University of Chicago and NYU. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, looking at the present Supreme Court and its challenges, cases that are in front of us to be decided. I want to start with a case that is connects to the beginning of this republic. The idea of shared sovereignty is what I've been reading about. John Adams versus Tom Paine, the whole understanding of states having authority quite separate from the national authority. This is before there was a national government. And the thinking was that the experiment, the vineyard of liberty, as it is called metaphorically, would be stronger to have competing interests and not one central authority. Tom Paine wanted to replace the crown, King George III, who was an active, aggressive foe of the early founding. He wanted to replace that with a mystical term, the people. John Adams regarded that as a fiction. I hear that often now in other countries. Populists, for example, throughout Latin America are now using the people as an explanation for why they're grabbing authority or changing the Constitution. That is not our case, but Richard, a very good evening to you. Yes. The legal battle of gun control at the Supreme Court. I read from the Post publishing last spring. The court will hear the challenge to a century-old New York law in the term that begins October. Now, the restriction requires that those who seek a permit to carry a concealed weapon to show a special need for self-defense, similar to laws in Maryland, Massachusetts, and elsewhere that the court in the past has declined to review. So this is the right to bear arms. This is the Second Amendment. This is what the NRA regards as the most important of the issue on the Supreme Court docket. Review for me, please, what Heller left us to understand from 2008. This is about the District of Columbia and weapons near a school district. And shared sovereignty. I add that because I did not go to law school, but I read all these books about the founders, and it would appear that they would have an opinion of a matter like this as well. Good evening to you.
Hi, good evening. Let's start with the founders. It turns out the intuition that you have about shared sovereignty made its most concrete manifestation in connection with the militia and with the right to keep and bear arms. There is only one provision in the federal Constitution which has an explicit division of authority between the national government and the state government, and that's the so-called militia clause contained in Article I, not the Second Amendment. And with this clause, it provides, in effect, that the states are in charge of their own militias, but they have to train them in accordance with a quote-unquote discipline. That is a training manual that's put together by the central government so that when they're called up into the active service of the United States, the units become essentially interoperable. They become compatible one to another. And you can only call them up for limited sorts of reasons having to do with insurrection, invasion, and the effort to try and make sure that you're going to try to secede from the Union. Very elaborate kind of compromise. The situation with the Second Amendment is put on top of that, and this gets you into hell. The Second Amendment is a very odd thing, and if you start with it, it begins, you know, starts talking about the need for essentially guns in order to have a well-organized Republic. And it turns out that what they're really thinking about is that they want to put a prohibition on the ability of the federal government to regulate what takes place in the state so the states could have a free hand in the way in which they organize their own militias. What Heller does is kind of make an odd reversal of the understanding, because what it is a case that comes out of the District of Columbia in which somebody says, aha, there's no federalism involved in that case. It's only something controlled by the government. And so therefore, we don't have to worry about competing state interests when we apply the militia clause. But oddly enough, the correct answer to that is the militia clause only deals with the protection of states against the federal government. And so technically speaking, it should not be called into play at all with respect to Heller. It's just a question of a unitary federal government controlling anything and everything that starts to go on. What Justice Scalia does is create a huge change. He says that the whole first clause, which talks about why it is that we need to have a militia, is just surplusage. It's an introduction. And that the only thing that binds is the second clause. Well, let's take that. And then what Heller does is it says, look, when we deal with constitutional review, we're always worried about what the standard is that the state has to show in order to justify a limitation on a constitutionally protected right. And the sort of traditional understanding with respect to guns is that the federal showing was extraordinarily low. What Stoller said is that, no, you've got to do a lot more than that. And then the question is exactly what it is that you have to do. And he said, whatever it is, and he didn't quite give you the correct standard, you're not going to be able to tell somebody who keeps a gun in his own house for self-defense that he can't do it unless you have some very powerful justification. And that gets you to the New York statute, because the complication that happens there is what they do is they stress the special needs that one person has in order to keep the gun. That's not, I think, what Heller meant. I think what Heller meant is that the government is going to be hard-pressed to show that you need to protect public safety by limiting the use of these guns. And it may be that somebody doesn't have a special need for a gun. He's just as afraid as everybody else of going out in the streets in a dangerous neighborhood. But so long as he's been trained in weaponry and doesn't have a criminal record of one kind or another and shows no signs engaged in a social activity, my guess is that under the Heller test, this fellow would be protected from the gun. So what's happened is New York State has had a long hostility with respect to the private ownership and possession of weaponry, and they're trying to carry it forward into the Heller age, where the level of scrutiny is now a lot higher. And my guess is that the Supreme Court took this case, and it's been 13 years since Heller, largely because it's going to reverse the decision. It's probably going to be a 6-3 decision. I don't think you get any liberals on this particular case. But it does strike me that the justifications that are being put forward by the state for the restriction of the right to keep and bear arms are pretty thin in this case.
Richard Puzzle, the former governor, Andrew Cuomo, has said New York's nation-leading gun violence prevention laws have made us the safest big state in the nation. That's not quite as accurate as I would like it to be, given the troubles of this last year and a half. But in any event, the governor, the former governor, is asserting my understanding that New York has an experiment as well, just as the national government is an experiment in liberty. And why is it that the national government cannot be obliged to let New York choose its own path? There are states that allow a right to carry all the time. And if you want, you can vote with your feet, or you can obey the law. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Why is that not shared sovereignty?
Well, because it's a very different form of shared sovereignty. The way in which the original Constitution was organized, there would be no federal oversight of this. But after the case called McDonald, when Heller was applied to the states, it turned out we had a different version of shared of sovereignty, which is most clearly understood when you look at the Bill of Rights. It starts off being restrictions on what Congress can do, and then slowly it gets interpreted to be federal restrictions on what the states can do. And then with the passage of the Civil War amendments having to do with equal protection of the laws, due process, and so forth, it turns out that shared sovereignty, very consciously in the Constitution, takes on a different meaning. The states can now decide to do whatever it is they want, but there's a huge filter that they have to go through in which you can make federal challenges on constitutional grounds to state courts. This is a huge transformation which was put into place after the Civil War because of the widespread sentiment there was sufficient abuse inside the states before the Civil War and that the federal constitution could not reach them. And so sure enough, you look at it, it says no state shall make or enforce any law that, and then you're off to the races. And what happened in something called the Slaughterhouse Cases decided in the early 1870s is the court looked at this stuff, and the question was whether or not there could be some state regulation of a particular activity, a slaughterhouse, do you create a state monopoly? And it was challenges limiting the privileges and immunities of other citizens who wanted to enter into the same business. And what the Supreme Court said is, we can't believe that there's this bigger transformation that has taken place. And what they announced is that the Constitution should not be read so as to make the federal government, quote unquote, the perpetual censor of every activity that goes on within the states. And that was true until segregation started to rear its ugly head. And then starting thereafter, mainly moving into the early part of the 20th century through Brown v. Board of Education, you get a completely different version. And federal constitutional restrictions in Brown v. Board of Education bring an end to state segregation. And nobody was prepared to make the argument argument that was made in the beginning, if you don't like what's going on in one state, move to another state. And so we have a very different set of conceptions of what it is that we mean by shared sovereignty. In the one case, we mean that the states are totally autonomous and free to do whatever they want. And in the other, we mean that the states are free to initiate various kinds of legislation, but they have to go through a federal check, which in some cases will be very light and in other cases will be extremely severe. And that has to do with the different standards of review, higher in race cases, lower in other areas. And the question with respect to guns is just how high will the federal scrutiny be?
Speaking to Professor Richard Epstein, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, looking at the present Supreme Court docket and what is to be argued, what is to be decided. We're going to turn to another question of shared sovereignty, of what is the state authority and what is the national authority when we look at religious schools, K through 12 schools, and Maine. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.